And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello there, I guess horror fans or podcast listeners. It's me, the Chris Keeper, your host for The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. And, you know, I'm not really sure what to say. I mean, this month's movie is great. It's Dr. Giggles, MD. It's a great movie. But, Jesus Christ, I got nothing. Nothing. Well, I guess I should let you in a little bit on a little behind the scenes and how we make this sketchy expired sausage around here at the vault. You know, as a horror host, I have a simple job, and I only have, like, a few tools at my disposal. I've got a goofy voice, name, and appearance. You're just gonna have to take my word for it on the appearance. We got sight gags, except this is a podcast, so those are out the window. So basically, all I'm left with is puns and wordplay. Puns and wordplay. And look at this, Dr. Giggles, MD. Right? Right, you think? Oh, how many puns are in there? I'm sure you're thinking of them, and you know, they're all in the goddamn movie. Every single one of them. Nothing. I'm left with nothing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am one of your hosts, Mr. Luke Giaconetti. I'd like to thank everyone for downloading and listening to the show tonight. And I can't do this by myself. I'm going to need some consulting physicians on this particular episode. So left to right across your podcast dial, my brother, Dr. Jason Giaconetti.
If you think that's bad, wait till you get my bill.
Yeah, who can't be top of them? Am I right?
Yeah.
Am I right? And you heard him there, Dr. Hair Metal Hero, Chris Tyler.
Laughter is the best medicine.
Very true. And last but not least, the senior physician on staff, Dr. Two True Freaks OG, Chris Honeywell.
I know. It sucks.
So many good ones in this.
I had a backup one, but that actually wasn't from
the line that I had was right at the beginning. He should have kept his hands to himself, and that that just sets the whole tone for that.
My backup was maybe she won't notice.
My backup was somewhere along the line. Old Doc just threw a piston.
So the thing is, I had one because I was trying to like not have one from the doctor. So right. The one I had was, you owe me 35 years of sleep, you sick son of a bitch. And, you know, I was like,
So if you can't guess, you may actually guess from these lines. Most of the time our lines are still obscure. But in this movie, you got a really, really good chance of guessing from that opening. Because we are setting your way back machine all the way to 1992. Because it is Dr. Giggles, starring Larry Drake and Holly Marie Combs. And, oh my God, 1992 just exploded across this movie. Yes. And I'm not going to bury the lead. This is a a hoot, a literal hoot,
yes,
is what I sent to our group chat. And it's like, it just starts and never stops. I said to my wife, I said, it's amazing. It's gore and doctor jokes, and that's it.
Not a boring, not a boring second. Not a boring second.
Yep.
and it, I mean, other than it having a bunch of nudity, which it really doesn't have any, it hits all the other horror tropes. Who's the first couple to die?
Yes.
African American couple.
Yes, that's one of my first notes. It's like they're hitting that they are aware of all their tropes and just like pounding them into submission. I'm gonna call this movie the spiritual cousin to Darkman and and to
that's because Larry Drake's in it.
And
I'm kind of thinking
It's sort of halfway between Darkman and why can't I think of it off of Stuart Gordon?
Reanimator.
It is somewhere. Yeah. It's not as gory as Reanimator.
But it's
more gore. You know, it's more intense than Darkman. But it has that same manic energy and humor.
Right.
And like as soon as I saw the platelets at the beginning, like flying through a bloodstream, and then it ends with the scalpel just cutting someone's heart open. And I'm like,
yeah, really bad looking. Yeah, yeah.
This is pure. Yeah. This is pure Sam Raimi. You know, Sam Raimi influence.
Well, and you know the thing is with both of those films, right? Because let's expound on that premise. Darkman and Reanimator are, to me, both like a live-action comic book.
Yes.
Yep.
And that's exactly what this was. So, if you watch this, Dr. Giggles, right at the beginning, they say a Dark Horse production. And it's like, that's Dark Horse Comics. So this was a deal that Largo Entertainment signed with Dark Horse Comics to develop films based on their comics. And this was a... Now... Jay, I think you know this because Dark Horse released an adaptation, sort of. It was an early version of the script because if you read that comic,
it's different.
It is very much different. But the broad strokes are there.
Yeah.
But I don't think they ever did anything else with the character. But this was, in fact, designed to be like a comic book. And so the original script was much, much darker. But Manny Coto, who's the director, and at this time, Coto... He had done an episode of Monsters. He had done some Tales from the Crypt, right? I think he wrote an Alfred Hitchcock Presents. He hadn't really done much, and he's mostly known for his work on Dexter and Star Trek Enterprise at this point, right? And American Horror Stories, but this is very early in his career. He wanted it to be like a Tales from the Crypt comic, to the point that that's how they got Larry Drake, because Larry Drake was... You know, he had done L.A. Law, and that's what he was known for, but he didn't want to be typecast. And so the fact that it had some humor is what they were able to get Larry Drake in there. And it's like, I remember so vividly this film being advertised, this film being just absolutely everywhere. And since it's our horror rack hanger-on, let me just say that, again, if you were shopping in the video stores in the 90s, you certainly saw the MCA Universal home video release of this. It is the cover is the one sheet. Yep. Where it has the title with the R in the doctor being a scalpel, then Larry Drake wearing a mask because it can't be topical, staring at you, right? And then you see the doctor standing outside of the house with the scalpel behind his back. This film had at least three taglines. The VHS one used the doctor is out of his mind. the other ones were the doctor is insane. And then the little Nightmare on Elm Street-esque rhyme that they do in the movie, if you're from Morhigh and you get sick, fall on your knees and pray you die quick. So I remember definitely seeing this VHS tape. But I remember, maybe you guys can back me up on this, I remember just seeing and being very aware of this movie in 1992, because it seemed like advertising was everywhere for it.
Well, it was all over the back of the comic books. Like, maybe because I read Dark Horse, but like I remember the print ad for this being in the back page of comic books, like, you know, the back ad where the ad would be, you know, come on the back cover.
Yeah.
I literally remember seeing this. The image of the poster of this movie, I've seen thousands of times. And I didn't read the same comics over and over, but I read a lot of Dark Horse. Because I'm not a huge comic guy. For those of you who couldn't figure it out, Jay is not the big comic guy. But I didn't read a lot of Dark Horse.
I will say that the comics I remember my brother reading almost exclusively were the Gladstone reprints of EC Comics.
Oh my God, those were amazing.
And Dark Horse.
Yep.
A lot of stuff from Dark Horse. And it was all licensed stuff from Dark Horse. So yeah. It's Predator, Terminator.
Alien.
Dark Horse did
adaptations, so you would get like Predator 2, the adaptation of Predator 2 from the script, and it was like kind of the movie kind of thing, but it was a little different, right? But then they also did their expanded Terminator, which had the sequel that we never got, which would have been whatever, and then the Predator sequel, which was even better, where you have Dutch's brother. Which, you know, Schwarzenegger could have played that too. But they definitely did their licensed stuff. Like, I remember they did the sequel to Carpenter's The Thing, where they get picked up. And it's where, if you've never read it, I won't spoil it, but like, if they pick up MacReady and Childs, and it explains everything. And you're like, oh, this is crazy, right? But Dr. Giggles was one of those things that I remember when it came in. Because it just was one of those things. I didn't even have to. They just knew. The one thing I got to say, the Sue and Tom were amazing to have as a comic book store owners, because they knew where their bread was buttered, right? It may not have been a lot of us buying those Dark Horse comics, but they made sure that anything coming out, like it was a horror movie thing, they kind of were like, hey, next month. I'm like, oh, sounds great, grab it, you know, kind of thing. Or they always had at least one copy of it, you know, there. You know, to kind of like make sure, because Jay, no, Jay's going to buy it. But what you started doing, like, I would, like, there's, because we were not going to the movies to go see things. We were too young to go, obviously, with 92. I was in eighth grade. Luke was in sixth grade. Right. So we couldn't go to the movies, you know, just drive to the movies because we couldn't drive. Right. And the likelihood of Dad was taking us to see Dr. Giggles is pretty low. Yeah. Right. You know, I'm saying it wasn't going to happen. Right. Unless it was part of a sneak preview, because my dad always loved a good deal. And a sneak preview was a great deal. Got two movies for the price of one. Now, in all fairness, the bar was set pretty fucking high with Predator and RoboCop. There is no.
Yeah.
As good as Harry and the Henderson in Inner Space was, which was both very funny, and as good as Red Heat and Short Circuit 2 was, because Circuit 2 at the time was good. And as good as Big and Die Hard was, which was a crazy one.
Jesus. Die Hard, another right? one.
Yeah, right. Big and Die Hard. We saw that for my birthday. That was crazy, right? Nothing to this day has ever overtaken Predator, then RoboCop. No. And I'm like, what? Oh, yeah. So
that literally shaped a lot of my tastes in entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
One night.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? That like that night is so seminal to both my brother, to Luke and I, about like how we look at movies. It's two of my favorite movies of all time. I saw them back to back, and at the time I had no idea. Now, in all fairness, Predator was the number one fucking movie in the country. Like Predator was killing it across the country. But be as it may, the whole idea was that we weren't going to see a lot of movies in the movie theater. We saw a lot of them on VHS, and then we saw a lot. We had HBO and Cinemax and Showtime and whatever, right? But we didn't get cable until 86, 87, 88 in there, because I was in like fourth or fifth grade, because my cousins had cable, but we didn't have it. So like we literally could not see the things on HBO. So people are like, oh, did you see that movie on HBO? We're like, we don't have HBO. Like, yep. we couldn't get cable down our road because it was a dirt road. So the whole thing
story
was...
Story of my life.
Once that, yeah, but I'm saying, but once that, once we got access to it, a lot of those movies we got to see. Like, and Dr. Giggles is one of those that I don't ever remember. I don't remember ever renting Dr. Giggles to watch, but I remember seeing it on like HBO or Showtime or Cinemax. But I had read the comic, so I already knew, quote unquote, what was going to happen. And let's be honest, it wasn't that deep, you know. Like you weren't like, you know, this is certainly not Citizen Kane. But by the same token, the one thing I could guarantee, having read the comic, I go, well, if the comic's anything, if the movie thing like the comic, this is going to be pretty good because it never stops. Yeah. The movie never stops either, which is great, because what's the biggest sin you can have in life? Don't be boring.
Don't be boring.
Yep. I think so.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's higher quality.
We just throw this. Let me just throw this in real quick because I want to. Luke kind of talked about some of the people here, like Larry Drake. We mentioned was on L.A. Law, and he obviously was in Darkman, right? Holly Marie Combs. For those of you who watch Charmed, will know exactly who that is, and Picket Fences, right? She was also in Born on the 4th of July, right?
Primarily known as the middle and later oldest sister, Piper, on Charmed, which she was on for 8 years.
Yeah, the Charmed is what she's definitely known for. But, like, Glenn Quinn, who plays Max, that's from Roseanne. That's, what's his name on Roseanne?
Boyfriend.
Yeah. It's not David. David was Darlene's boyfriend. It's his brother. God damn it. Why can't I think of his name?
Right. I don't remember either. Maureen would know, but...
Yeah. It'll come to me. But, like, the whole thing
last episode where actually that's wrong, right? And the couples are backwards because it was all fake. It was all her book.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Mark. He played Mark. Right. Yeah, Becky's boyfriend. Well, remember when Becky left and then came back and then they had the old Becky come back on the show? And it's like... Okay, guys, you're getting a little meta, even for me. You know, I think so.
Well, that show got weird anyway. So
but the thing is,
it just kept. It's still getting weird, isn't it? Going on right now without even Roseanne in it? Right.
She's dead, but But the one that gets me is the dad Tom. Right, his girlfriend is Michelle Johnson.
Yeah, to blame it on Rio.
Right. Well. What I remember her from better than that would be from Waxworks. She's the one with the Marquis de Sade. And I'm like, that's the one from Waxworks. And that's
Waxworks, which we covered on this very podcast.
Yep.
Yes. So I said in the group, this movie wears its 90s. Like, well, you know, I mean, because it's so 90s. This movie, because of just the way it's shot and who's in it, and forget the clothes and everything, of course, right? But it's like, oh my God, because she wasn't on Charmed yet. Like, Charmed wasn't the hit it was in 92.
Wasn't a thing yet for another 8 years. Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, Waxworks was a small movie and she had a small part. Like, but you know what I'm saying? Like, some of these people were people you just kind of know, but it wasn't.
I mean, Dougie Dunn. Got killed right at the beginning of the movie.
Dougie Doug is in this movie for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? Who was friends with Dougie Doug and said, hey, do you want to be
in a movie? You know? Yeah. Gotta love Dougie Doug.
Hey, man, I'll be in a movie,
So.
Did he make this and Cool Runnings in the same year? That's what I want.
I think, was Cool Runnings 92?
No,
I thought it was later than that.
That 89, that was earlier. I don't know.
No, it's definitely a 90s movie. I'm hitting the Google.
We just watched Cool Runnings, but we've been inadvertently watching it.
Sure, Lucas, yeah.
With John Candy. So.
I was rooting for Max to die so hard in this movie, and I'm so disappointed that he didn't.
I was too.
Like, Max looks like he's like 35 years old. It's kind of creepy. And like, all the girls in this look like. They look like 12-year-olds that look like 30-year-olds. Like, the casting director definitely got, like, little short, skinny girls.
Lolitas?
For this. Yeah. And then all the guys, like, look like the standard 30-year-old high school students. And Max's whole character was just a creep. So it's like, all right, Max is going to get it in the face at some point.
Max is very much from the... Well, from the first scene we see him, my note is okay, he's dollar store Christian Slater, right? He's trying to talk like him, he's trying to look like him, but it's like, you, sir, are no Christian Slater.
There is no Christian Slater.
You're not even a Steve
Slater either, if we're gonna keep that going.
In the interest of fairness,
in the comic, Max does die. So you got that going on.
Oh, good. Good.
He died. He definitely did. Just real quick, two of the, you mentioned the girls in here. One of them is Sarah Melson. She plays Corrine. She was also on Frasier and the Wonder Years and Beverly Hills 90210. Yeah. That's, you know, kind of thing. She's a face that you kind of recognize as just being like a girl as part of a crowd. And then, was it Zoe Trilling? She plays Naomi. She's just another one. She was in Night of the Demons 2. And, like, she had a bunch of TV stuff, like, kind of thing. But that's, you know, but I mean, be as it may. Although, the doctor, the actual doctor is John Vickery. And tell me he doesn't look like,
Kyle MacLachlan? He looks like Bill Bixby mixed with Kyle MacLachlan.
He's even kind of
a little creepy. Like even the good doctor in this has like a creepy edge to him. He doesn't do anything really creepy. He's a good guy. He's it's a little weird that he's got a sword hidden in the side of one of his examination beds that just
is that
sort
a
of
sword, or did he just pull the leg off of it?
I thought he was like, I've got a few surprises, and I'm like, this is that? I thought he had a hidden sword in his, and
yeah,
I'm like,
been, yeah.
okay, all right, yeah. you know, so like, you know, maybe they were trying to add some depth to him, like the coroner in Return of the Living Dead, you know, with like. It's like, okay, maybe this guy has
a... can't be Don Calpa, sorry.
But even he had a little creepy edge to him, you know? He also reminded me a little bit of when David Cronenberg was in that...
Nightbreed.
Nightbreed, yes.
This could be Nightbreed. This guy here talks... Cronenberg's in this movie. He's creepy. Nightbreed.
Yeah, there's not,
I'm
not
saying,
a lot of...
Jason, X, he's right? in the movie 5 minutes, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's Nightbreed. Before we got in the air, folks, we were talking about like assembly cuts and different cuts. Nightbreed, the Nightbreed we got in the theater and the Cabal cut.
Yeah.
Not the same.
Not
the same.
The same.
Not the same movie.
Yeah.
So anyway, but that's another show for another day.
I got a tangent now and do my big note from earlier in the day. So girl's little brother is playing Dr. Mario.
Yes. Yes.
And look, Dr. Mario, it's not like a super Twitch game, but it is a puzzle game. This kid is playing it with the Nintendo Entertainment Systems flight stick, the quick shot. You cannot play a puzzle game with a flight stick. You cannot. Maybe that kid just wanted an extra challenge. I don't know.
That's what I'm
saying.
Well,
I mean, you could be maneuvering the stuff and turning it with it, but you wouldn't be hitting the button. And he was playing it like he was shooting at stuff. He was playing
he was so good at Dr. Mario that he needed to like really challenge himself.
Or his family bought him the Top Gun NES game, which is super fucking hard. And they got him the flight stick, and he's like, "Well, I got the flight stick. I'm using the motherfucker."
I guess it could have been worse. He could have had the glove on. Was that
power
the
glove.
Wizard?
I own the power glove. The power glove.
It's so bad.
Off. It was bad for many reasons. It was terrible.
But I'm saying the movie, which is just an hour and a half from promo to buy it. You know, the best thing with the power glove is when Freddy Krueger put it on again. He goes, "Now I'm playing with power."
I was waiting for it. Was
nice
one of
graphics.
The like? I mean, they hit every doctor joke in this. Like
everyone.
Larry Drake is
what doctors do best.
That he's the most valuable player because he's such
a nine iron.
Yeah. He's such a good actor that he can deliver the like. He's like having Robert Englund. He can deliver those catchphrases and make them. They're cheesy as hell.
He
makes
so
them work
the first time I
so
ever
well.
Saw him was on L.A. Law, and I seriously thought he had a mental deficiency.
Yeah. When he can do
his face.
He can make his eyes just go bad. Go dumb.
One thing about all the doctor jokes is that Manny Coto, so he, like I said, he, in addition to directing, has a partial writing credit, and he did rewrites on this. Well, his dad and his brother are both doctors.
Oh.
So you had to know.
Yeah, he just...
And he was the one that made it funnier. It's like, all those doctor jokes, you know, if your dad and your brother are doctors, and you make, at the time, you're directing TV shows, you know, it's like Ron White talks about. That's going to be really, really, really awful at Thanksgiving, you know?
Well, they only missed one opportunity, and I...
about another dick joke in my show. You know, that's
just... when I saw the kid watching video games, I was like, for one, you know, and Hiro, he's with me on this. Like, kill the kid. The kid's got to die in the horror movie to make me feel anything. So
I see, feel something.
I just was like, this kid's head is going through the TV, and he's gonna say something like, "You're gonna wreck your eyes doing, you know, something, some, you know, you're gonna go nearsighted by that," through the TV, and I'm like, he lets the kid live. Come on, man! In this movie,
but he says he's terminal.
Yes,
so that's why he lets him go.
Yes, he does. He does the boomer thing of just like, oh, he's already mushed his brains with video games. But, or that's another thing. Put his head through the TV and like, you're gonna turn your brains to mush, kid. It's all there. It's all there.
Teddy bears.
Yeah, yeah, and literally like, yeah, that they like this movie really. They sort of cut the legs out of a sequel for it. So
that's the thing, right? Clearly, they want a franchise out of this.
Yeah, but they used up all their used up all your catchphrases. You used up every single one in the movie. You didn't let one go. There's nothing left for other movies. No, Freddie stretched them out two or three per movie.
As a premise. It's you know, a guy who thinks he's a doctor who has medical training, who's a killer, is a good premise. But you're right. How do you turn that into a franchise?
Real quick, just I was going through.
Episodes of Dexter, so obviously.
Yeah. So both Jennifer Aniston and Ashley Judd actually auditioned for the role of Jennifer. We would later get Jennifer Aniston in Leprechaun. Debut. Yeah.
She puts that one on the resume anymore, you know?
You know what, though? We keep bringing it up, though. Ted Danson was considered for the title.
Leprechaun at some point. We're going to have to cover Leprechaun at some point.
Leprechaun, yeah, the original, yeah. Ted Danson was considered for the title role. Matthew Frewer was considered for the title role as well. And there was 17 people. There's the body counts up to 17 in this movie, but they said. The craziest thing is, so in the movie there's a POV shot from inside a mouth looking out, right?
Yes,
actually built. Weird as fuck.
Yeah, it is a mouth prop that's constructed from the camera to fit inside and behind. To match the size of the mouth, an oversized tongue depressor had to be created for Larry David to use. For Larry, not Larry David. That'd be funny. Larry Drake to use.
Oh, God, Larry Davis is Dr. Giggles. Or
Larry Davis. That scene is just like, what are we looking at? Like, this is insane. Like, this is nuts. But you know what, though? This movie is considered to be, quote-unquote, unintentionally funny. And I'm like,
what?
I think you missed it. No, listen. What? It's often said to be unintentionally funny. And I said, I think you guys missed it. It's supposed to be funny. But because it's a horror movie, some people, not present company, but some people who are so smart to movies think that they can't possibly be funny and a horror movie at the same time. Those slapdicks need to fuck off.
No, dude, so they had the Weekly World News in it. You know, I mean, they.
I know.
But they did have a Matrix joke years before the Matrix. I was watching it, and I'm just like, oh my God, she took the wrong pill.
Yeah,
she took the blue pill. You're supposed to take the red pill.
Hey, you know what? When I saw the Matrix, I stood up and I walked out. I said, "It's just fucking Dr. Diggle.
Just fucking rip off."
You know, the only thing they didn't do, and I got to say this is, you got remember we watched Freaked, right? You know, kind of thing, and like the Chodo brothers are doing their thing and whatever. Like they went the kind of Lawnmower Man. Like animation, like the CG kind of whatever for the opening, right, kind of thing. And they did the oversized, but when you see the oversized mouth and stuff, I was just happy that they didn't go Chotto Brothers there, where it's like, you know, that's a real big shoe, you know, kind of thing. And it's like this over-the-top, insanely weird, or Screaming Mad George, or like one of those, like, you know, like, because those guys, their effects, which are insane, are usually absolutely insane. Here, I mean, yes, it's weird, but like, they didn't go, they didn't make him, like, when he's all burned at the end and whatever, it's not like zany, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's yeah. still, you know, yeah. But it's just one of those things. It's
yeah.
What I'm saying is they show just enough restraint to not make right. it zany.
The thing is, so two things. One, we talked about the giant mouth. Okay, yeah. The giant mouth is non-diegetic, right? Yeah. It's so they can yeah. make the shot. Where does the giant Band-Aid come from?
Yeah, well,
yeah, I wondered about that.
It is giant. Where is the giant? I've never seen a Band-Aid that big in my life.
They don't make Band-Aids that
beyond
big.
Beyond that. Yeah. So, Jay, you talked about how people, that critics and others have said, oh, the movie's unintentionally funny. And I think we all agree the movie's intentionally funny.
Yes.
It is a horror comedy. It is really trying to be like a Tales from the Crypt or a comic.
It's not a parody.
So
it's just
thinking of,
partially comic.
It's not like Scary Movie. It is a horror comedy. Right. It is a horror movie that has a lot of black comedy in it. But I got to thinking about this after. So I watched this 2 days ago as we're recording. And it occurred to me because I watched it. I was working that day and I was working at the house and I watched it over lunch on Tubi. So because Tubi has the best shit. I swear to God, Tubi is fantastic. Yep. But anyway. So I watched it on Tubi over my lunch break and a little bit after my lunch break. And I was thinking about it when I was working the afternoon. I'm like, because we were all talking on the chat, man, this movie's some 90s. Don't make them like this. It's like, you know, though, they kind of do. Because one of my older daughter's favorite films, it might be her favorite film, is Happy Death Day.
Oh, my God.
And
Haley loved that movie, too.
Happy Death Day is not exactly the same, but it is still... A horror movie that has a lot of comedy in it because it takes the audience and it kind of lifts them up and manipulates them by being scary and funny.
Yeah.
And we've had kind of a bumper crop because we had, remember, we covered the movie Totally Killer, which is very similar to Happy Death Day. And then there's the movie, what is it, Freaky, which is like Freaky Friday, except it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
We have this kind of bumper crop of... Now, these are all teen-aimed films, but this film is fairly teen-aimed also. We have all of our heroic cast, for the most part, are in high school.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's summer break from high school. So I think we do still hit this market. Perhaps the humor is a little bit less broad than in this film, but I still think it says something to the fact that, yes, you know, we talk about, Jay and I, you and I have talked about this plenty of times, but we talked about this on the show, too. After you get scared in a movie, what do? Then you look around and laugh.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's like that relief after that, after you're scared. So the two emotions are very similar, and they play well together. So I like that they leaned into this. It's a movie about Larry Drake as a killer wannabe doctor. It's
He's not even a real doctor. He's not even a real doctor. He just wants to be a
doctor. They missed a I'm not a real doctor, but I play one on TV gag.
Play one on TV.
But
the thing is, like Luke would say, right? So Happy Death Day, and then Happy Death Day to You, right? The sequel, which is even funnier than the first. Like it's just crazy shit. Like, literally, that might be Haley's favorite. Haley doesn't like Haley liked whatever. She loves those movies, and I know, but that's she'll watch them. When she's like in a car ride, she'll watch Happy Death Day or Happy Death Day to You, right? She loves those things, and she likes Freaky. But I said to her, I said, you probably would like Dr. I'm not watching this movie with you, Dad. This old movie, and I'm like, I'm telling you, you're gonna like it. No, it's right now. She also announced that she no longer watches movies, which is great, you know, kind of thing. I was like, cool. So why don't you just bugger off and let the rest of us do our fucking lives here. But the idea, though, is that, like, those kind of movies that are made that way, like, kind of thing, because, like you said, you want to, you get scared and you want to laugh. And that's why, there are movies where there is no laugh, right? And that's why those movies are considered to be, like, truly terrifying movies. They're, like,
and there is... Mind, like, right? It's deep red. that has, even when it has comic relief, there are scenes to Zod that are, have no purpose other than to make you feel uncomfortable.
Well, I was thinking more, yes, I agree with you. I was thinking more along the lines of, like, Exorcist 3. There is no fucking let-up in that movie. That movie just kicks you in the nuts the entire time, right? As scary as The Exorcist was, and I saw The Exorcist with Kelly, who had never seen it before, in a theater, and she was fucking terrified, right? Like, there are movies where there is no comedy. There is no let-up. There is no anything. Like, that's the problem when you make, like, and you're trying to make serious horror, and you're trying to make, like, the movies that are kind of supposed to be funny, whatever. You can't mix those together. Like, you can't make a movie designed to be truly terrifying and then put the comedy in because it, you want people to be in that state of unrest the entire time. It's why Session 9 works so goddamn well. And I know people are like, Session 9's not scary. It is. It is terrifying.
Yes, Session 9's pretty scary.
Yeah, because there's no let up.
When nothing happens. Right?
Yeah, nothing's happening. You know,
there's two types of horror movies where nothing happens. There's boring ass movies like Paranormal Activity, and then there's scary movies.
Terrifying
like
ones. Yeah. So,
but that's what I'm saying. It's like no let up. The great part about, and this is one of the things I was why I said this movie is so 90s and everybody make, there's so many movies in the 90s. Excuse me, that and In Search of Darkness has kind of touched on it in their last two documentaries, which was 90 to 94 and then 95 to 99, that mix together genres, right? They're the horror with the comedy part. They're like, I mean, From Dusk Till Dawn is literally one of my favorite movies of all time. And that movie is funny. That movie is an action movie. That movie is a fucking vampire movie. It's not scary.
It's even a little bit of a true crime movie at the beginning.
The movie's also thirsty as hell, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so you know, her dance is pretty, you know, at the time.
That's all I'm done. I see it, man.
Tarantino must have his feet, man. He must have his feet. If he's gonna have his movie, he's gonna have his feet.
That's this movie too. We'll come back to that point in a minute. I'll let Jay finish his point, but I got to talk about that.
So the thing is that like so you know there was all these kind of movies that kind of started blending things together, and even the horror movies, the ones that were like supposed to be like this is like Bats, like the Lou Diamond Phillips movie, right? Which you're like that movie what. It has parts in it because it's Dizzy plays the other doctor. I don't know if I remember her name, but she's Dizzy from Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers.
But there's parts in there where it's kind of like not supposed to be funny, but like there's lighter parts because they didn't want to make every single movie so super serious. But you can see the movies that happened before Scream definitely leaned into some of that comedy and like to be the horror thing. Once Scream happened, shit changed.
Yeah.
Disturbing Behavior changed. Like that movie was supposed to be so different, and they cut the fuck out of it to make it a different movie because they wanted to make it more Scream. So then you had all the Scream movies, the movies that were recut to go that way, where you took out the comedy, where you took out the stuff and made it more of the old kind of, not old slasher, but more in that slasher vein, right? But then you had the people like, well, I can't make that movie. I don't have that, so I'm going to have to put in the other genre to kind of make it work. And then that's when we got, remember, we had, Bordello of Blood, right, was Tales from the Crypt. We had Demon Knight, and then what was supposed to be the other one? The other one was, I forget what the other one was supposed to be. There was supposed to be but it became an actual movie. I can't think of it right now. But, like, Demon Knight has, like, it's weird, but, like, they were taking Tales from the Crypt, but Tales from the Crypt had funny stuff in it,
yeah,
but it was super dark, right? You know what I'm saying? And it's funny when you watch when you watch a movie that you know is 30 years old, whatever, right? But then you start putting it in context of when it occurred, around what's the seminal thing that's changing stuff. Watch the quote unquote big movies before Jaws. And then watch the big movies after Jaws.
Yeah.
And then what happened after Star Wars. Right? You're saying, like, and I'm not saying that Jaws and Star Wars, you know, those were fucking world changers, right? I'm not saying Scream did that, but watch what happens to the genre when watch what happens to the genre when that happens. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
The twist, well, the turn, the make, you know, as things change. So you can see something here where it's like, okay, yeah, they don't really kind of make this. But they stopped making these kind of movies for a number of years. and we finally got them back because they're like, wait, there's money in this. We want that teen audience.
Well,
I know.
Yeah, I said it because the teenagers love this shit.
Yeah,
that's what a lot of it comes down.
Yeah.
Well, because the guys who don't mind, the guys want to go to it, and the girls won't mind if they know that it's going to be funny.
Yeah,
and they've
got
a girl that's going to be the main character, and she's going to survive.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not trying to speak in generalities, but demographically, that works.
Yeah, that's how the formula came about.
It's going to be a little scary, but it's going to be plenty of stuff in it that will be enjoyable for more mixed audience, and at the end it'll be a good time. Everyone will enjoy themselves, and you'll be feeling up after the movie. You won't have to feel down.
Well, right? Yeah.
I think the whole the movie that sort of started comedy horror was American Werewolf in London, and that was a certain that was like somewhere, it was an 80s movie, but it was also still coming out of the 70s. So the humor was sort of naturalistic in it. And then when Evil Dead 2 came out and, the Raimis started doing stuff and Tim Burton was starting to do stuff, lots of moving camera and baked in humor. But I think Evil Dead 2 sort of it didn't really get copied as much as it just sort of showed that it was okay to just go full out with your gore, with your camera moves, with your humor, with your horror all thrown in together. And that sort of shaped going into the 90s, it sort of set a template, I think Dr. Giggles is more off the template of Darkman, but I think Darkman definitely came out of some Evil Dead, influence, obviously, because it's Sam Raimi.
There's a lot of Evil Dead Darkman.
And that sort of set the trend for the 90s until Scream came along, and then and Scream and
Blair Witch did it too.
Blair Witch
changed things too.
The Grudge and the one with the well, Those were jump scare, that creepy, put in the TV and heads wobbling back and forth, and that sort of set that version, And even some of the, just regular horror movies now have that language of horror in it, somebody in their house and somebody runs behind them real quick and they don't see them, but we see them, and the sound effects and stuff like that. So,
I mean, part of it, to me, the comedy aspects in the 90s too, it's, the 90s were, the kids ask me about that. It's like, was that really like that in the 90s? And the answer is almost always yes.
Yes.
And it's the vernacular of sarcasm.
Yes.
In the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. We worked in sarcasm the way another artist might work in oils.
That's because, right? because my generation was starting to get into films, and Generation X was just ridiculous sarcasm, couldn't take anything seriously. Everything,
when you're coming out of, I've talked about this in different contexts, actually, much different contexts than film, but it works too, right? When you're coming out of Vietnam and you're looking at the American institutions, not just the government, not just, baseball mom and apple pie, but the things that were normal and commonplace for the country before Nam, and then you look at the deep-rooted cynicism for that entire generation.
Yep.
It's like,
yep,
my old man did this shit, and I'm not doing this because of the general attitude in and around the Vietnam War. So it's not surprising.
And in the
now,
80s,
I mean, you look at this.
The 80s had when I grew up, TV. I mean, obviously there was
a glut of great movies in the 80s, but there was still this gloss over 80s media, like TV shows, even the shows that like I watched and enjoyed, you know, the sitcoms and stuff that, I mean, I was like everybody else. I was watching all this. I was watching Cosby and, you know, the Michael J. Family Ties and stuff like that. But, you know, but then like Full House was too much for me of the 80s, like treacle. But they all had a very treacly, you know. Oh, yeah. They were supposed to be, you know, the 70s got sort of hip and modern and transgressive with their sitcoms. And then the 80s sort of went back to that sort of 50s sort of, you know, super family friendly, you know, glossed up version of like the American family and stuff. You know, people that are living in like sitcom houses that were way above where like their jobs should have put them in and stuff like that. And I think Generation X, we got sick of that and we were like, we want to just ruin all, you know. Now we got to, you know, we brought in cynicism and sarcasm and edginess and to good effect at first, and then it eventually becomes insufferable. You know, like
it becomes self-parody.
Yeah. And the 90s was like this short burst of my generation, which was a tiny generation. So we only got like our Sam Raimi's. I don't know. Sam Raimi might be a boomer, actually, but he's close to Generation X, you know. But yeah. And then you get Tarantino.
Well, I mean, hold on a minute. You're older than me. You?
I will be 47 in a few months.
Yeah.
So I'm the youngest one on this call.
I'm
born in 1980, and by most definitions, Gen X includes 1980. So we're all some of us are younger than others in Generation X, but we're all Generation Xers.
Yeah,
that's one of the reasons this show works.
Yeah, I'm 1968 Generation X, so I'm 3 years into Generation X.
You're a geriatric
generation. Yes, I might as well be a boomer. You know, I might as well be. You know.
So that's the thing is, like they always talk about, if you are born at either end of the generation, right, kind of thing, like, right? You're between, you know, boomer to Gen X to millennial to whatever. Like, there's that crossover, right?
Yeah.
Because it depends on, are you the oldest or the youngest or the what? Like, so obviously, you know, I mean, Luke and I are at the tail end of Gen X. And there is some school of thought that says that technically, even though, you know, whatever you might say, we should be called technically exennials, which means we're Gen X, but we also are partial millennials.
But who wants to be an exennial?
No. But here's how I describe it to people, right? When you look at later Gen X, the people who were born in the late 70s into the 1980, I've actually written this in a paper for like college, and I said, you know, however you might look at it, I said I refer to our niche of a generation as the Oregon Trail generation. Like we were the ones who had a computer in the classroom. We had one computer in the back of the room. It was a special thing.
Yep.
You got to use it at a time. Like, so we were there for, like, you know, rotary phones and all that stuff. And we're here to be getting a cell phones. Like we're in that part where we're just young enough, where we're just old enough not to be the millennials that, like, oh, we can't stand, right, kind of thing, or to be the, you know, the older part of Gen X or the boomers. But, like, it's just funny because when you look at the filmmakers that came out of the, for our whole generation, they wear their influences on their sleeves. Like, I mean, they do. I mean, all directors have, you know, eventually do, but what's influencing them? And when you start getting younger directors, right? Like, we saw this when we talked about the new Candyman, right? Like the whole idea is that I just forgot her fucking name. The director there, when she's younger, but you can tell that this is someone who appreciates the stuff that came before and went and studied it in how she presents her, in how she presents her stories, right? Like a guy like Jordan Peele, who is closer in age to us, you see in his movies the stuff that, like, yeah, I see those influences, right? Yeah. And he knows what's going to scare you. It's the last movie we just watched before this was Primate, right? Primate was a throwback to, like, an older style of making movies. And I thought was very effective in that way because it spoke to a generation. It spoke to the us. It spoke to the old men in the room kind of thing, right? But by the same token, you know, as I'm talking, like I was talking to some of my students who are, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old. They were like, oh, they go, oh, I heard it was like really violent and like whatever. And I'm like, it's supposed to be violent. It's supposed to be. It's not
a rabid
be.
Chimp.
That's what I said to him. I said, what did you think? I go, but that's what it's supposed to be. I said, it's not supposed to be, you know, bubblegum and sunshine.
Yeah.
Right. But that's the whole thing.
Male people.
I have to go back to General Ben's talk show where he gets at the audience. No, Ben, no.
Yeah. So, no, Ben, no. So I'm just saying this. It's one of those things that is, as you go back and watch, you can see those influences are. And when you look at what influences what we as you know, a collective we, right, the generation kind of thing, when you look at the filmmakers from that time and us as film consumers, and you consider the shared experiences that we had, even people who there are plenty of people who are our age who had shared experiences who you've never met, but if you said Saturday mornings eating cereal, watching cartoons, like, yes, like, mm-hmm. you know, or you said, like, I mean, now Luke and I didn't have a lot of this, but like, we come home and because there was at least two of us. I mean, I could, if I came home by myself, it made a bit different, right? Come in there and you do, you know, you sit down, like, you know, you're like a, like you unlock the door, you go in the house, you'd walk, I mean, we didn't walk home from school, but those kind of things, those shared memories that happened across the nation, I think are why we look at movies like Dr. Giggles and movies from the late 80s and early 90s when we're starting to get into our formative years, when we're starting to get into like middle school and maybe, you know, in junior high and stuff like that. Those movies kind of stay with you. Even if you don't remember them because they're your favorite movie of all time, they stay with you and they start and the way they were told, because it speaks your language.
Yeah.
Right.
I was just going to say, it's a language that you learn as a kid, you know?
Right. That sarcasm that is so cutting that most of us have, that this whole generation does not understand, is in these movies. It's here, right? The bad doctor jokes, the puns, the things like that. Like, that's okay. There were no memes back in the day. We just yelled quotes at each other. Yeah. We fucking did.
They just weren't called memes. They just weren't called
memes. If your first CDs weren't in the long box, don't talk to me, man.
Oh my god. Remember the fucking, there was so much wasted fucking shit on those things. The CD's the same fucking size. The box and the fucking piece of plastic thing at Caldor's and shit like that. Just saying Caldor's makes me old. Anyway.
Hey, so
what I'm saying is, right, but that whole thing, like that whole, the way the movies talk, the way the dialogues, the way stuff is like that, we see that, you know, and which I think is why sometimes when we get movies that kind of harken back to that, I don't mean like movies that are like trying to be retro, but actually movies that harken back to that way of doing things, we, in our age group, enjoy them more. We find that, okay, you know, but you know, while we can appreciate really well done, you know, movies, great acting, whatever, that's the candy,
speaking our language
cereal.
Yeah
right. But that's the Count Chocula, that's the sugar cereal we like, you know, kind of thing, right? That's what that is.
Whoa.
and we, you know, we hold on to, no, I'm just saying, you know what I mean, Luke, it's like I'm saying, we kind of hold on to that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Say
blah, blah, blah. Only say blah, blah, blah when I say I don't say blah, blah, blah.
Right. So, but that's part of the thing, too. And one of the nice parts about, obviously, what we've been doing lately, where we do kind of a more current movie and we go back to a horror rack hanger-on, is it's also part of that idea too of, as we said, it's called a horror rack hanger-on. If you are not old enough to know what a video store was, you don't even know what the hell we're talking about. What do you mean, what rack? What do we, you know? But that's it, because this is the kind of stuff we would go through. When you would go to the mom and pop store, you're like, oh, look at that, the covers were what drew you in. The artwork was important.
I had the poster for Dr. Giggles for years. I saw it now, but I had that in my room in high school from the video store. And I was like, you know, and I didn't watch the movie because I was like, the movie cannot be as good as this poster. I'm just going to leave it at the poster. That's because I had the Future Kill poster, and I'm like, I have to see, with the H.R. Giger, I have to see this, and it was so disappointing.
You buy Emerson, Lake, and Palmer because it's got a Giger cover, and you're like, ugh.
Yeah, well. Yeah. So I just want to throw one thing real quick. Kind of look. So in Brazil, Dr. Giggles is not called Dr. Giggles. It's called The Death Specialist. I feel like I've heard that title somewhere else. Death Specialist. So it's like in Japan. It's like in Japan where Dr. No translated to No Doctor is Required. I was like, well, I don't know.
Because originally, when they translated Dr. No originally, it sounded like a comedy. It was like, Dr. No, right? It was like a question mark and an exclamation point. It was like Lionel Hutz.
And Terror Bang, Talking cat.
I didn't want a talking cat.
Yeah.
But
this man truly has all he can eat.
He went fishing, but the he ate all of our shrimp and two plastic lobsters. I hear the shaggy gorilla. But so just a couple of real quick things. So you mentioned Tarantino and feet. So the last 20 minutes of this movie, for all you fucking weirdos out there, you know, if you really, really want to see, you know, see our girl without her shoes on, if you really want to see Piper, if you want to see Holly Marie Collins with no shoes on, she is barefoot for like the last 20 to 25 minutes of this movie.
Yeah.
And there's some great shots of her feet. I think it's like on the edge of the frame. They're like dead center frame where she's climbing up a broken sled of stairs.
What the hell is that movie?
I can honestly say this. I've never looked at a foot and thought it was attractive. Feet are the most utilitarian part.
It's
got to
be.
Body.
I mean, there's people who it's
their thing. There's some weirdos out there. The people who like it like it a lot. Apparently.
I will pray for your souls. Yeah. The last time I checked, is she naked?
All I know is there's five stars on Letterboxd and Quentin Tarantino's Dr. Giggles review. That's all I'm saying. There was also another weird, creepy moment where the guy was like, hey, girlfriend, we're going to have sex. Can you put my mother's underwear on?
Yes, oh my God, the weird.
And that's never addressed.
In the comic, they at least have the decency to say, it's my mom's, brand new, still has the tags on it. Which is a little bit better.
A little better. But it's not good. It's
great.
Just not
it's still not great,
good.
But it's still good. Like, yeah.
There's a joke in here somewhere, but they didn't even, like, the movie didn't even, like, I was like, doesn't the movie realize how creepy this is? Oh, maybe not. This time period, it probably didn't.
No, but at the same time, it's logical, right? It's like, if you're in high school, where the hell are you going to get lingerie? You're going to steal it from your mom and your sister, right? So it's like, okay, it's like, again, it's a dumb idea, but it breeds, right? It makes sense in high school.
It does until the therapy bills
come in the toilet. That is fucking gross.
But the thing is, he's fishing it out with his own toothbrush, which is killer. Well, but here's the thing is, when he picks up the condom, the fucking tip of the condom is spewing water out. So even if she was still fucking probably getting pregnant from it because motherfucker had a hole in it.
Had three holes in the tip of it.
Yeah.
But I do want to say this. There's a couple of things that in this film that I thought were basic but well done as far as just straight filming. Okay? So, Jen, that's Holly Marie Combs, she has the nightmare that she flatlines. Yeah. Right? where she is tied to the heart monitor and she flatlines and she calls a doctor, but it's a nightmare, and her doctor and Dr. Beagles cut her open. Okay? Later, in the basement of his house, she does in fact flatline. And yeah. The cop has to bring her back. And that cop, for a guy that dies, he is going, like, balls out to the wall, like hero arc here, and he gets killed. The other thing, okay. The other thing, when they're examining the house, they talk about the stairs going up, and he goes, I'm not going up those stairs until I lose 20 more pounds. And then when Max goes down the stairs to the basement, they show us the stairs being, you know, barely connected, and then the stairs collapse. So they foreshadow several things, and they do a good job of it in a fairly subtle way for a movie that's not subtle at all.
Well, so it has its own sort of subtlety. You know, that's the thing is you can say what you want about this movie. It's not poorly written. It's not poorly shot. It's not poorly directed. It's not poorly acted. It's got it all. It's layers, levels above the usual stuff like this.
Everybody, you know, on this production understood the assignment.
Yes.
I do personally wonder
what the response was.
Yes, they did in fact lean into the fact that everybody was having a good time.
Yeah.
I personally would be curious what the response was in situ, right, when Jen flatlines, right, when he stops her heart with the defibrillator machine, but he stops her heart. It's like, that's, I mean, again, for the final girl to get her literally be dead, that's pretty daring, right? Yeah. Because it's like, to put her in mortal danger, sure, but to actually kill her, it's like, that's pretty good. Now, the idea that, of course, but again, it's a film about medicine, and we've all seen episodes of ER, we've all watched General Hospital, we've all watched whatever. Just because a patient flatlines doesn't mean they're dead, right? And so the cop, of course, knows CPR and is able to restart her heart. So it's like, again, I when I read that, you know, Manny Cotto's dad and brother were doctors, I'm like, yes, all of this fits with that, right? You know, that's like the thing that lawyers really like the movie, you know, My Cousin Vinny. I wonder if doctors really like this movie.
They probably do. They just can't admit it. They can't admit it. That's all. You don't want your patients to know that's your favorite movie.
Yeah. So one last thing, Chris. You said you didn't know how they would bring back because they used all the jokes. Perhaps they find a note written by him, but nobody can read it. Right, and that's the setup for the second one, was that there's a note detailing how he survived, but no one can decipher the handwriting.
Oh, there was not a bad handwriting. You're right. I was trying to figure out what the discarded ones, but that is definitely definitely. You know, I've written out your prescription, and they're like, this is just gibberish.
So real quick, because usually it's opened October 23rd, 1992, made $2.7 million on its opening. Worldwide, so U.S. and Canada gross is the same as the worldwide gross of $8.4 million. I don't have how much it cost. I don't see that here. But I can't imagine it cost that much.
No.
That's, you know, kind of thing. So this movie actually made money, you know, kind of thing, which is not always the case with these things. You know, you wind up having, I'm trying to find the, how much it cost. That's part of the problem though. It costs $7 million. How does this thing cost $7 million?
Marketing. Probably a good portion of it.
Probably had to be marketing. It had to be. But, I mean, it was distributed by Universal. So this was a major release, you know, kind of thing.
Drake is the biggest name in it. I remember seeing the poster
for this at Universal Studios.
Yes. Oh, yes. That's right. I totally forget. Yes, I remember that now. Old Universal Studios, where, you know, like, it wasn't all just Islands of Adventure. I think it was like, here, what are we going to watch? We're going to see a horror show where they're going to do, like, they're going to show us backstage special effects, and they're going to, you know, okay, cool. Like, this is really cool. Like, and you can actually, like, you know, yeah. It wasn't all just, like, Islands of Adventure. And this is which is nothing wrong with that.
And more Harry Potter.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
All I'm going to say is, like, if you've made it this far and you haven't seen Dr. Giggles, just go watch it. It's on Tubi. Yeah, for God's sakes. If you listen to the ball, you will love this damn movie. And if you don't, I want to hear from you. Freakvault@gmail.com. And I think we have an email from Gene that we'll get to the next time, because I owe him, because it's been sitting in here for like at least a year. But if you watch Dr. Giggles, freakvault@gmail.com, tell us what you think, because I want to hear everybody's take.
Oh my God. I didn't realize that he had an email sitting for a year, but it's okay.
Did anybody else notice that Dr. Giggles went out like Daffy Duck too? Like, he was giggling, but then he went into
doctor in the house.
Well, Daffy's pretty nuts, right? That's his major trait.
Well, I think that is like the major, like if you would have to go at post Evil Dead 2, the biggest influence to horror with comedy in it, it would have to be Warner Brothers. It would just have to be Warner Brothers. And that's also what I mean, everybody involved grew up with, you know, is like their baseline of humor is Saturday morning.
Well, I forget what book it is, but I that's how I've seen Evil Dead 2 described. Is that?
Oh yeah. Warner Brothers and Three Stooges.
It's a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Yeah,
it is.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the specific one. Is that Ash dies and is in hell, run by the Three Stooges.
Yeah, and then and then Joe Dante, like, definitely, like, you know, starting with Twilight Zone and then with like Gremlins and stuff. You know, just wearing it on his Gremlins 2, especially was just might as well have been the first Looney Tunes movie.
So again, like Luke said, it's readily available, folks. If you haven't seen it, well worth checking it out. And as Luke pointed out too, we even talked about the comic book as well. Luke actually sent us a link, the link to read the comic. What was it, Luke?
It's one of these. If you like to sail the high seas, you can find the comic. I'll just leave it at that. I won't elaborate.
Okay. All I'm saying is it's available out there to read.
It's not on any official service. Let's just leave it at that. Okay.
Yeah. Some of us still have the comic somewhere. Well worth the time to go check out. Folks, if you haven't seen it, spend the time, check it out. You know, you'll enjoy it. This is definitely a fun evening.
Yep. And remember, you know, if when in doubt, just take two and call me in the morning.
Yep. Cough.
Using the whole fist, Doc?
Oh, God. Better lube that up.
All right, we're going out on that.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of Two True Freaks.
How it can happen in the United States of America that this can happen and there aren't enough guys of your age to go up. I don't give a shit if you go to the school or not. You can't stand to have this happen. It's getting to be re-goddamn ridiculous. Oh, Christ, I'm not trying to talk for clapping. I'm trying to talk for you guys. You better start thinking.